I didn't look into this. Anything we got a note here for announcements? I don't know. Birthdays? There's anniversary. Who's anniversary? I don't even know how to read this.
Always has a birthday.
Satish and Rashida. Yeah. Very good. How many? 28. Well, congratulations. Excellent. Thank you. All right, I guess I'll open us up with a prayer. We can get started then. Dear Lord, thank you. Thank you, God, for this Sunday morning. Thank you that we can be here. Thank you for the opportunity, Lord. And just pray for guidance and wisdom on these subjects that we're approaching, Lord. Just thank you for your work. And just as you work in this room, Lord, and just help me to be a blessing, encouragement to others. And we just pray for your blessings on the time in Jesus. Amen. 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 You guys be seated. So, we've rushed through dysfunction junction and boundaries. It was kind of intentional. I know it was a lot going on, a lot of work, a lot of things to think about. But I really just figured, man, we spend 2 weeks on dysfunction, we spend 2 weeks on boundaries, there's a whole other month. And there's still some more to cover here that I want to get through. So hopefully that just got you guys thinking about some things. Last week, boundaries. I think boundaries are very important. I don't know, that one to me didn't go as smooth as I would have liked. I don't know, we went a lot of different directions. Maybe it's just hard for dysfunctional people to talk about dysfunctional things. I'm dysfunctional trying to talk about how to fix dysfunctions. But the key is boundaries are the biggest and most consistent theme in fixing our dysfunction. That was the biggest theme. So before I go into today, which today we're going to talk about technology, cell phones, social media. So I'm going to push buttons in everybody's life today, most likely. They're probably not going to want to hear most of it. But as far as some boundaries. So I do want to give a couple of examples before I move on, because they're just, some are fun, some are not fun stories. But in our life, we had to draw boundaries. In our family, my wife and I both came from alcoholic families. So as we were parenting and having children, we had to make decisions. And then decide, okay, we're not going to have alcohol in our house. It's not going to be in our refrigerator. It's not part of our life. And I said, my boys are going to have to make their decision about alcohol when that time comes. And let's be honest, 16, 17, 18, 19, they're going to be confronted with this. They're going to have to make these decisions on their own, or they're going to become the legal age, and they're going to have to decide on their own what they're going to do with alcohol. I can't make that decision for them. But my wife and I decided, it's not going to be in our house. It's not going to be in our refrigerator. As they make this decision, at least they're going to know at home how we did things at home. Rather than the way I was raised was, don't drink beer. Get me a beer. Do as I say, not as I do. So go get my beer, but don't do this. So we decide that's the way we're going to raise our children. Well, coming from alcoholic families, we had to draw boundaries on certain things. So we had family members visit, and we had to say, hey, we're glad you're here. We want to spend time with you. You can't put your beer in our fridge. Okay, so we go through our visit and what have you, and I find out later on, like this, something doesn't seem right, and I find out later on, okay, this family member hid the case of beer behind a tree in the yard so they could drink it. Like, okay, I thought, you know, saying it can't be in our house was clear, but saying, okay, we can't have this on our property. The unfortunate part of that is this family member decided alcohol is more important, and they have not visited us since. But we had to draw that line and have that boundary in our life. And that was painful, and that's hard to say. Like, we would like you to visit. You just cannot drink and get drunk with us. And unfortunately, this person chose that rather than choosing their family and visiting our boys and things like that. So that was a hard one, but it's painful. I think it's necessary and important to do. And we have to draw these boundaries in our lives with families and friends. So another instance I'll give you was more fun to talk about, and it's more about children and fear. And I call this boundaries because we just let our children make these decisions, or we give them too much authority, which I'm going to talk about later, or we just do what they want. Like I talked about our boys already, one of our boys that didn't ever want to do anything, so my wife dragged them to it. Turns out they liked most of the things that they ended up doing. So we're in Wisconsin Dells, and this child does not want to go down the water slides or anything like that. So my wife is like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's okay. Help me carry my little raft with me. So they're, she's like, okay, Mom, I'll carry the raft. He's carrying the raft, and they're waiting their line, going all the way up the stairs. We get to the top, and she kidnaps him.
Yeah.
And the old worker up on top of the thing. She's like, push it! Let's go! Let's go! Screaming! Bloody murder! And my wife's like, just push the light! Push the light! Poor kid working on the thing. He's like, what do I do? And it looked like the kid was being murdered or kidnapped or something. It was outrageous. But guess what happened after that?
He liked it.
He loved it. Went right back to do it and enjoyed it. But if we just let him say, I don't want to do that, what's going to happen? They're never going to do anything. They're never going to experience anything. They're never going to grow. So I consider that part of boundaries as well. So lastly, I had to teach our boys. I taught our boys at a young age. This wasn't put on them at 17, 18 years old. At a young age, we talked about your choices in life as you grow up. Things like alcohol, things like drugs. You're going to have to make these decisions. And if you choose these paths as your lifestyle, we cannot support them. We will always love you. We will be your mom and dad. We will do anything for you. But if you willingly choose these paths, we cannot finance it, we cannot support it, you cannot live in our house and choose to do wrong. Now, it doesn't mean you can't make mistakes, so don't get me wrong. Child's going to make a mistake, repent it, you know, do something wrong, that happens. That doesn't mean you're out of my house. But you willingly choose sinful life, godless life, drugs, alcohol, partying, willingly, consistently. It's very painful. I told my boys, it's one of the most painful things I will ever have to do, but because I love you, if you choose those things, you can't live here. We can't make it easy for you to live that life. We can't finance it, support it, feed you, house you, while you do those things. So those are instances of things that we chose in our family, hard things to do, and drawing boundaries, what have you. So that's my examples of boundaries. To finish that up, we didn't get a little far into like independence. What's our view on independence? I'm not going to get into it now, but is this betrayal? If someone wants to be independent, is it scary that somebody wants to be independent? Do we have no connection? So independence is isolation. So it just, we're all isolated anyways. So what is healthy independence? So definitely consider that in your where you take this from here. And lastly, identity. Who am I? Where do I end and you begin? And I even put that somewhat, even like the story of the Wisconsin Dells. Where do I end and you begin? You have your identity. You have your experiences. I am going to do what I have to do. My identity cannot be in my children. Children have their own identity. And then, obviously, our identity cannot be wrapped up in our spouse. We cannot hide behind our spouse or who our spouse is. We have to have boundaries there as well. So that's the end of boundaries for me. Just a little quick recap on that. So now I'm going into the technology. So I'm going to start out with something with Ecclesiastes. I'm going to read Ecclesiastes 1 through 9. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. That's extremely poetic, isn't it? Like, I love the way that sounds. So I love Ecclesiastes. Pastor Warren's taught on it. It's very interesting. It can be taken many random different ways. People take it in a lot of weird directions. But I really enjoy Ecclesiastes. So I struggled with this for a long time, thinking, come on, Solomon, like, there's nothing new under the sun. Like, there had to be new things in your time. And there, I mean, that was 4,000 years ago or so. There's been new things. Well, primarily he's speaking of human nature, our struggles, the things we deal with. Even if we have new features, new inventions, things like that, our struggles and things like that don't change. That's primarily what's going on here. Human nature has remained the same, always will remain the same. But I'm going to take that from another angle for you guys to look at as we go. So remember last week, Pastor Warren said something that really stood out and lines up really well with this. Nothing ever occurred to God. So remember that as we're going here. 2 weeks back, he really broke down last 100 to 150 years of things like technology or things that have changed. You know, obviously now we have electricity, computers, cell phones, TVs, the list goes on. And I look like, wait, well, nothing's new under the sun. So I want to look at that from another angle as well. Pastor Warren's really broke down that 100, 150 years. I really see like Satan's work breaking down the family. And it kind of seems like a long time ago. It was slower, some different steps. If you didn't hear what he said about it, it was great. Look it up. But these different things that happened between the fathers going off to work, mothers going off to work, wars, radios, families being separated, things like that. So I really see Satan's work slowly tearing down the family. I really see it starting to accelerate quite a bit as well. So biggest theme from all of that is maybe these changes even aren't always bad. They're just necessary. But we must adapt, adjust, and correct for them. Or else, we're sitting on the sidelines just letting this stuff happen. And it's happening to us. It's happening to our children. So with that in mind, I have a question for you guys. Who invented electricity? Before you answer, it's a trick question. But the person or whoever you want to say is not the trick. So who knows what the trick is? What's the trick to that question? Electricity wasn't invented. It was discovered. Okay, it was already there. It wasn't new. It was discovered. So however you want to look at it, there's many different ways. Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, and there's people way before that even you can attribute things to. That's not the point. The point is, it was there. God allowed that to be discovered. And he allowed it to be discovered in his timeline and for his purpose. So I'm going to go on another side from there. We have the Tower of Babel. Interesting, really interesting, because I really just skipped over this for decades because I'm like, what does this mean? What significance does this have? But let me read really quick the Tower of Babel. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower the people were building. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it's called Babel, because the Lord confused their language of the whole world. From there, the Lord scattered them all over the face of the whole earth. So, primarily, this is an example of defying God, disobedience to God. There's some interesting parts to it that I never noticed before. Any idea why they used tar? Most likely, possibility is a similar process to what they built for the ark. They used bricks, baked them, and used tar. Likely make this floodproof or waterproof. Okay? I mean, it describes this process. Kind of makes sense. Like, we were thinking, hey, we're going to defy God, and if he floods us, we're going to be ready. We're going to do this. So anyways, the end of that, the main thing for me is the Lord said, with one language they begun to do this, nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Now, this is just me, my opinion. Honestly, I think God might have just been saying, not yet. Trying to do these things, and we do these things in my time, and that's what he did. So that was a long time ago, 4,000 years ago, okay? So what does that have to do with now, technology now? Well, I'm glad you asked that. Electricity didn't occur to God. He wasn't surprised. Neither did any of the technology that we've seen today or since. He wasn't surprised how we've arranged materials, computers and cell phones and the internet and what have you. So it didn't occur to him. He's never thought, wow, look what they figured out. This stuff is all within God's plan. So it's not really new. It's being discovered, and God has already known and known what was happening here. So after that, so what's my point? God allows these discoveries to fulfill his plan. So, how so? What do you mean? Now, I'm going to go a little further. I'm going to go basically skip to the end. I'm going to read Revelation. Two passages of Revelation, 12:9, verse 4. The great dragon was thrown down, the ancient serpent, who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. The next passage here, 11:7-9, this is speaking of the two witnesses. And we have here, and when they have finished their testimony, the two witnesses have finished their testimony, the beast that arises from the bottomless pit will make war on them and conquer them and kill them. And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city that symbolically is called Sodom and Egypt, where their Lord was crucified. For 3.5 days, some from the peoples and the tribes and languages and nations will gaze at their dead bodies and refuse to let them be placed in a tomb. So John's telling us here a couple things. Satan is the deceiver of the whole world. And then he's telling us basically people from all over the world, every nation, everybody will see these two bodies. And they're obviously basically celebrating the fact that they've destroyed these people, and everybody is going to see this. So how is Satan going to be deceiving the whole world? Now, if you flash back 30, 40, 50 years ago, I think you'd read these passages and think, wow, how is that going to happen? How does that make any sense? You know, the internet wasn't even a thing maybe 30 or 40 years ago. You can talk to Al Gore. He can tell us about that. Young people have no idea what that means. Computers were like business, financial use exclusively. People didn't own a computer. And if you did, it put letters on a screen. That was it. What's that?
The computer room was too big.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, and then finally, when you did have it at home, I mean, all it did, I remember my dad for his business, I mean, all it was DOS. I mean, maybe computer people remember DOS. It's just words. Green letters on a black screen is what a computer was. And the average person didn't own one. A cell phone was a brick, like this big, that made phone calls. And you had to pay for it by the minute. So, like, you made a phone call on the road. It was such a big deal at that time. And it was extraordinarily expensive, so hardly anybody owned a cell phone. That's even, I think, 30 years ago. Not many people owned a cell phone. The media, maybe 30 years ago, it was maybe worldwide, but it was still mostly local. Media was mainly local for a long, long time. And if so, even if you had this worldwide news that came around, it was still, how did you have everybody looking at the same thing? It was still not really all that feasible. Like, not everybody's going to see the same news at the same time all the time. So that was really, going back then, you'd read these passages and think, this doesn't make sense, I don't know how that's going to happen. And now I think if you look at today, it doesn't seem difficult at all, does it? I mean, to deceive the whole world, I mean, just put it on here, and we're all going to see it. I'm not going to get a lot into AI. Put it on here, deceive the world, or the two bodies. Everybody's going to see it right here. I'm not saying this is how it's going to be. I do not pretend to understand or know. We do not know what God's going to do in these end times specifically. So I'm not saying that's what it's going to be, but I'm saying, man, it is very feasible now and not very difficult to say, that's not hard to happen. We can see that without a problem. So again, was God surprised when we discovered the internet? Was he surprised that we put a smartphone together in 2007? Is God surprised that everybody now basically in our society is glued to a screen? I don't think he's surprised. I think this technology has been discovered. God knows and God has plans and his purpose for it. So I would love to continue. I'll do one more thing. Revelation 13:15. I don't have it on the screen. And this is, again, this is just possibilities. It speaks of, some translations say there's a beast that gave life to an image or gave life to a statue. And again, 40, 50 years ago, we're thinking, I don't know what that means. Maybe that's symbolic. Maybe that's, you know, metaphorical power, you know, or maybe it's really mystical or something like magical, like he brought this thing to life. Well, nowadays, it sounds awful lot like it could just be a robot or AI to me. Again, I'm not saying that's what it is. I don't pretend to know. But as time has gone on and technology keeps going, I think this stuff makes a lot more sense than it did 40 or 50 years ago, possibly. So, anyways, I would love to go down that path of technology and eschatology in the study of end times. That is not what I'm doing. I was hoping that was just interesting and would get your guys' attention on what's going on with technology, what we have, what we're giving to our children, and what it could possibly be doing and how important this is. So that was just the introduction. Hopefully that's interesting. If it is interesting to you guys, look into it more. And again, I can't emphasize enough, I'm not pretending to understand and say that this is what's happening or how it's going to happen, but it definitely seems possible. So now, statistics. I love statistics. So mainly cell phone, internet, social media statistics. First thing we see, 40% of children own a mobile device by age 2.
What?
Okay, can't read. Good point. They don't read. They're not reading them. They're watching, right? It's the babysitter. I mean, I see it. It's terrible. You know, kids making noise in a restaurant, put a screen in front of them. And it's amazing. I don't pretend to see it a lot. I don't have young kids anymore, and I only glance and watch little bits. But you put it, it's amazing to see. You put that in the hands of a 2-3-year-old or so, they know what to do. That's that they're not manipulating the entire thing, but they sure as heck know how it works at that age. So moving on from there, 58% of children own a tablet by age 4, and 68% by age 8. And then 95% of teens own some type of mobile device, 13 to 17, 95%. So primarily everybody has one by that age. Primarily usage, YouTube, social media, and gaming are the primary usage. High rates of late night use, midnight to 5 a.m. among teenagers. Midnight to 5 a.m. on teenagers. It's
big problem is that parents are not aware of sleeping with their device in their bed.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we were over at a party, some of us yesterday, Papito. We were watching people 20 years older than me, but they couldn't even talk.
Mm-hmm.
They were on their little screen. He gets this everywhere.
Right.
Old people, young people. But yep. All of my kids are buying with
Yeah, and late at night, and it's young, it's teens, it's young, and we're going to get to adults too, because it's absolutely part of it. And like he said, a lot of the parents are oblivious. We don't even know. Our kid went into the room and it closed the door, and we have no idea what happened. This is called the comparison trap. Studies consistently show that high social media usage, 3+ hours daily, is linked to a 60% increase in risk for depression and anxiety. Most children are using social media at least that, if not more. So obviously, we can link this to a lot of bad things. This isn't really news to everybody, but hopefully when you see this together, maybe it'll make us think about what's going on. And there's plenty, so we got a lot to go through. So stay comfortable. Body image. This is a big one that I'm really passionate about. Approximately 40% of teen girls report feeling undesirable or not enough after using image-heavy platforms like Instagram, TikTok for extended periods. And it makes sense. What I hate seeing, and I've seen this in our extended family, is the only reason I even considered it. I see a girl post a picture, and I saw my wife show me, like, that doesn't look like that girl. I know what the girl looks like. This is not that girl. This girl looks a certain way, and this picture she posted is highly modified, slimmed down, changed, features are changed, weight is changed. She posts this picture. What does everybody do? I like it. And the comments, you're so beautiful. I love you. Look, great picture. Thumbs up everywhere. Why are we doing that? You are just told this girl, this is looking good, and what you see in the mirror is not. She doesn't like what she sees in the mirror because she's modifying her pictures that she's posting online. Everybody's liking it. It's terrible. And I don't have the answer to it other than stop doing that. And I would almost like to just create. I don't post on social media, really. My business, every once in a blue moon, I would almost just like to start posting for people like, I like the way you look normally. That's not going to be very popular. But that's what we need. You're beautiful the way you usually look. You don't have to change this picture. But instead, we are reinforcing this and creating these issues.
It also teaches them their only worth is in how they look. So that our females are completely wrapped up into how they look and not, God gave them a mind, God gave them talent. To drive comments on social media are how they look.
Oh, you're so beautiful.
I've been doing this for 16 years.
Correct. And there was airbrushing before that. And,
there was 60 years. Twiggy came out 60 years ago.
Yeah.
And they've been, and that's where I've been able to see.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and again, nothing new under the sun. That same struggle has been going on the whole time.
Have people liking you in your social
right.
group in your school.
Right. And then you had your models and magazines or what have you that were modified as well, and we just didn't even know it. And there was actually kind of an awakening period at some point in time where people started bringing this to light a little bit. Not enough nearly at all. Just social media exacerbated it crazily. To get off on a smaller side that I wasn't thinking of, Pam Anderson, of all people, most people might know who Pam Anderson is. She was wrapped up in the porn industry and other and regular TV shows and things like that. She literally kind of spoke out against this and said, I did all this for so long, and I don't follow her or pay much attention to her, but for what I did see, she's like, she doesn't wear makeup, she doesn't go out of her way for anything, and she says, I am who I am. And I think that one good thing about that whole woman's life is maybe that, now this day and age, is like telling women, like, I'm not going to go through all that and try to please all these people. And we're just trying to please people we don't even know. And or we know we don't have relationships. We don't have real relationships. I'm going to get to that later on. But it is, as my wife likes to say, social media is just the biggest lie we've bought into. And we've all just bought into this lie, social media. But we will keep going because we're going to get there deeper and deeper. So the pandemic accelerated digital adoption. With 1 in 5 families now using mobile devices to manage bedtimes, meals, and emotional regulation for younger children. Unbelievable when we think about what we've talked about so far. Let's go to the next one too. 75% of teens take their phones to bed. So the pandemic seemed to accelerate this, but managing, I don't even understand, I do understand it, but it's inconceivable in a way. To manage your bedtime, to manage your meal time, and to manage your emotional regulations with a device, a screen.
Dave, we have to deal with the first issue. And I'm sorry to slow this down.
No, go ahead. We got all kinds of time for this.
There's no need to lie, and Christians lie a lot in this room. Girls like to be pretty. That's the fundamental issue. The problem is it used to be pretty in a small community, your class, but now you're out on social media. It's a bigger world. That's going to depress you. And then you realize most of the things you should see are not airbrushed. They're digitally created now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just a war, but if parents don't realize daughters want to feel pretty, and if that's all you ever, if that's the only place they ever get praise, not for their abilities, not for their diligence, not for their work ethic, not for their mind, well, that's where they go. And by the way, that's our problem. Plus turning the dumb phones off.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to turn ours off too.
Yeah.
I think we've run into another issue though.
Our generation, our generation. Right behind us, this is what they are. So it's not like us. That's what I'm saying. We're fighting a little bit different battle though. It's not like we came out of this and we experienced, you know, learning the technology. We've got a generation, two generations that have grown up with the same technology. So we have parents, so that's going to be arguing for the compliments too.
Exactly, because that's what they've grown up with too.
Yeah.
Just from the school side, we had 3 kids this year with crippling anxiety that had their psychologist recommend partial hospitalization programs, PHPs.
Wow.
That's never really been discussed at Lake County before that I know of, that we have kids going into these. I had a good Christian parent. It's just a generation now. This is just how kids are. While their child had access to a cell phone since at least 5th grade, because, and they weren't here in 5th grade, but they talked to me about the bullying that the child had in 5th grade with the cell phone, but the child still had unlimited access to it. The child was clinically depressed as a teenager, and of those 3 kids, only one was involved. The change that we've seen at the school, and it's been longer than this year, that's been probably 6 to 7 years where we had boys stop eating in the lunchroom.
Wow.
because they were worried about body image and what others might say. Social media definitely plays into it. We have kids who are terrified of me taking pictures of them and putting them on the social media. This is rampant throughout a high school that is not big and is largely nobody's being bullied.
Yeah. And it's definitely not limited to girls by any means, but absolutely. And we're going to, you guys are touching on points that we are going to continue to get into as well. So I'm kind of running through, but I love it. This is fine. I'm not trying to rush through this one. I've rushed through the last couple intentionally so we can spend some time here too. But
all of this feelings for her, I go back to the girls. So I'm going to be ugly to the man. If a man doesn't know how to be a father, his daughter is condemned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's that simple, because that's the dad's job. Mom's job is for the son. Mm-hmm. Now, there's overlap in different ways, but the self-image of a comes from how dad looks at that girl.
Okay. Yeah.
I've had adult women in this church. I could name names. Wanted me to know how I thought if they were pretty or not. Why would they care?
You know, and I can tell you personally, like fathers that told their daughters that other women were attractive and never told them that they were pretty, you'll deal with that your whole life. It's terrible. It's disgusting. And unfortunately, these lifelong scars. But anyways, back to bedtime. So when we talked about this before, what was one of the key fundamentals was happy, healthy bedtime, meal times together. Like, if we had two big things we could do to help our dysfunction, help our families, have a meal time together and have a happy, healthy, consistent bedtime. And this is completely opposite, throwing that all out the window. 75% of teens are taking their phones to bed. We're going to talk about guidelines and rules and usages later, so this is just statistics, so keep that one in mind, because we're going to talk about what we should be doing with that. But again, meal time, bedtime. Ruining this with screens and social media. So next, 72% of teens, so your guys, what you guys were just talking about, say they often or sometimes feel peaceful when they don't have their smartphone. 44% of them say it makes them feel anxious. So clearly this has an effect on mental and emotional moods and things like that. That's pretty clear. So the average teen, over half of parents, 54% fear their child is addicted to screens, 67% remain ranking device overuse as a big problem. So we're saying it's a big problem, so it's kind of like everybody's agreeing on that, 54%, 67%, at least a decent amount. I think it's a problem, but what are we doing with it?
It's a huge problem when we took away the cell phones from the day this
year. Oh, really?
They're now locked in to the things, and we have parents who apply for children.
Yeah.
We have parents who are still texting their kids. It's like you should be able to call the office, right? But it's an emergency. So we need to make contingency plans to be able to pick up all cell phones and take them outside and make an emergency for the baby.
Yeah.
But it's parents are contacting their kids.
And I was glad to hear that policy. I think it's a good policy. Kids should not have their cell phones all day during school for numbers of reasons. So I was happy to hear that. I can't even imagine. And the parents that are just like, there's boundaries. Like, your kid's in school. I never talk to my parents in school. Ever. If we had to talk to my parent during a school time, holy cow.
But aren't the parents working?
Right.
Do they have that much time to go to work?
Well, I think during our jobs.
Yes. Right.
Most parents also use their phones at work. When he worked at DHL, they kept having to say, put your phones away when they were working in the office, because one of the people would just be on her phone all day, not doing her job.
The problem is, you talk about all these kids and teens and kids and all these things. The problem is, parents can't tell themselves no. So we say, don't do that, but it's just like the alcohol thing. And the problem is, we actually have to start with parents. You have to tell yourself no. Like, look at your time. What are you doing on your screen? Because you are communicating that to your child as well.
I know, right. I haven't worked for a long time, but I can't imagine where I work being on the phone all the time.
I can't imagine what has happened to our productivity in our society.
Yeah.
Honestly.
That's true.
I have one, well, not on the board. The average teen spends roughly 7 to 9 hours a day on entertainment media. time that used to be spent in embodied community, time they used to have together with people. And you know what? I think I have this later on. Like when my buddies and I played video games together, mm-hmm. we argued with each other. Sometimes we got fist fights with each other over our video games. Like that was much better than what's going on right now. We're interacting with each other. We got to manage each other. We learned how to deal with each other. We were an embodied community at that time. Mm-hmm. 4 in 10 parents and teens report regularly arguing with one another about time spent on their phone. So this is a point of contention within the family. Makes sense. The average U.S. adult spends 7 hours and 4 minutes looking at screens daily. That's 30% increase from pre-pandemic levels. So again, pandemic exacerbated some of this somehow, and Pastor Warren's talked about that. I think honestly, we're just never going to fully recover, and that really affected a lot of things in many ways. But I look at that 7 hours, a little over 7 hours. I mean, how is that even possible? And that's an average, so that means there are people that are doing this more. I can speak personally. My screen time is usually 2 or 3 hours, and a lot of that is work, GPS, and things like that. I'm like, 7 hours? So we're working. We're sleeping. What else is going on within that time? It's amazing to me, and that's the adults. So no wonder we have a problem. And I think this is happening at work, and it's also happening at night and bedtime and sleeping for the adults. So we want to teach children how to do this healthily, and I don't think adults are doing it healthily either. And we'll get more of that.
Part of an adult is that you can now take your office home mm-hmm. at work.
Absolutely. And that's more boundaries too, and same for me. I can work 20 hours a day if I wanted to, and I have to just say, it's done. Tomorrow's another day. That's hard. But now when everybody's able to bring their offices home and their, you know, like BlackBerry came and then went on from there, that our email and everything came home with us. And
yeah, some jobs are 24/7. I think there's a certain degree, it's like, you think, oh, 70 hours. But a lot of people, I mean, at one point maybe it was on a computer, on a screen, mm-hmm. or on your phone, like, oh, online banking, you know, bill pay. You're not like writing a check out and putting it in the post office. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, this is great. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain amount of time you spend like doing your banking, doing your ordering groceries for some people, you know, mm-hmm. like instead of just going to the grocery store and buying it, you're spending time looking and selecting on your phone. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing is like texting. I mean, texting's been really nice. Hey, I just want to drop you a quick message. But what used to be the only way you could quick give someone a message is call them up. Mm-hmm. You could do that on a rotary phone. You could do it on a touchtone phone. You wouldn't necessarily have to do it on a screen phone. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, it's nice to be like, okay, quick, drop a text. Or I need to tell you this, but it doesn't have to be right now. But then if you're sitting here looking at text or having to send text, you're once again looking at the screen. Yeah. Anyway.
And the same problem. There are some legit. For it, and it's helpful in many ways. And we're going to get to the point, because honestly, the point is not, we can't just say no technology, no cell phones, nothing. That's not where we're going to land here. But there are legitimate and good uses for it. We have to learn how to deal with this. And to that point, I mean, just think about why the Bible app is not good for a lot of people. Hey, you're going to read the Bible, love it. Bible app is fine, I use it, I love it. But how many people start their Bible app and a notification comes up? And so there's your problem. Now all of a sudden, oh, I got an email came up, or I got some message come up, and now I'm not reading my Bible anymore because I'm into the next thing.
Dave, I got to put an addition to this. It's fun. Mm-hmm. I started doing PowerPoint sometime last summer when I had knee surgery. Through a lot of instigation from various people, one nearby. You know what made me continue? Is anybody? Jared said, and looks at their phone, the Bible, in church, they're scrolling. So I thought, we'll just put it up on the screen. Just does away with the stupidity of looking at your dumb phone and scrolling. And by the way, sorry, old people, doesn't change for old people either. I watch people.
Yeah.
You want to be up in the balcony watching people? Why do you think I sit down during singing service? I don't want to see stupid.
Hey, I hope most people understand, but it's obvious. We don't think you're using your Bible in certain ways. It's pretty obvious. Just like children and a desk. I would be at a school and a kid in the desk is doing this. We know they're using their phone. My wife would say your cross is not that interesting. And same thing during church. It's clear when... It's... That's what you would say.
More impactful.
But the point being, I mean, it's clear when you're scrolling on your phone through church, it's obvious. It's not like it doesn't look like you're reading the Bible. Anyway. Moving on to the statistics. We're probably not even going to get through all the statistics today, which is fine. Because this is just the intro. Nearly half of teens, 46%, say their parent is at least sometimes distracted by their phone when they're trying to talk to them. So mainly half, and the children are even saying, well, this, I'm trying to communicate with my parent, and they're distracted.
I think all of the kids in elementary chapel said that.
Okay.
And they've done studies on this, and it's interesting what people do to get their parents legitimately the medical world. So my thing is like, I do things that I want experts to talk about. And they did a huge study on this and what kids will do to get their parents' attention. And they say a lot of parents are on the phone, the kids are like, oh, and all of these things, because they just want mom and dad's attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interestingly enough, from there, children from lower income households are spending nearly twice as much time with screens compared to those from higher income households. That's basically 4 hours versus 2 hours. So interesting part there, basically link this to financial abilities, things like that. Kind of makes sense. CDC report indicates teens with 4+ hours of daily screen time report higher symptoms anxiety or depression. We've hit on that a little bit here, so there's a kind of a new theme coming here that we're going to hit. So in 2010, this is called a 2010 pivot. Since the early 2010s, when smartphones became ubiquitous, the rates of suicide among U.S. adolescents aged 10 to 14 has increased by 121%. That's painful, man. Like, think a child 10 to 14 years old with that much pain. And it's amazing to think, like, how do you hurt that much at that age that you have to commit suicide? It's sad.
I don't know if anybody has a thought about that. Tom, you might from your work even. The problem is kids in that age group always, I mean, I wish we could skip 7th and 8th grade. We could skip it. Really, I'd like to go from 6th grade to about 11th grade. And everybody in between just gets one place or the other. But now you have a kid that can do that, I think, because they get down a rabbit hole on their phone. So it seems to be a much quicker thing. Kids have problems at that age because they don't
know if
they're a kid or an adult.
Yeah. And this is news. I mean, before you go home from school and now you're home. You don't have to deal with the bullies. You don't have to deal with the nonsense. You don't have to deal with whatever garbage you dealt with at school. Now you're home. Well, now it all follows you home because the cyberbullying and all that stuff, you're dealing with all the situation 24 hours.
I found a video chatting with another third grader. So
there's
literally they had just separated.
Yeah. So, and it's just painful to see. Now, when you add another layer, this is the same statistic, adding 10 to 24 year olds, that number is 62% increase, still in a suicide rate. But it's just interesting when you add the older group to it, that rate has come down a little bit. So I think it's worth just saying, okay, as you get a little bit older, there's less of this risk towards it. So on this similar topic here, nearly 40-50% of LGBTQ youth seriously consider attempting suicide annually. That's probably not news mostly, but then again, what has exacerbated this movement, in my opinion, all this social media technology, right? Everybody's promoting all of this kind of stuff now through social media, through our technology. So that, I think, has been exacerbated by this as well. Boys are exposed to porn around age 10 to 11. Girls about 12 to 13. I think that is changing a little bit more and more, and it's getting younger for both. How are they seeing pornography? Technology, right? And kids are sharing it with their phones, and it's in their hand. know, back, I've taught this to the men, like back in the old days, you had to go like get a magazine, mm-hmm. Or you had some creepy uncle or you had a friend that had this, but it was not just everywhere, and it was not the palm of your hand, and it was not in any second of time, and it was not like an accidental aside from the internet. And pornography is not just nudity and sexual activity, anything sexually provocative. And YouTube is full of it. YouTube can be very useful. YouTube is full of it. So we have who knows what ages, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old on YouTube, could be doing something completely innocuous. And up on the top right is some girls in bikinis. And what 7, 8-year-old boy is not going to click on that and say, what's that? So obviously that means we need to be serious. I'm going to say it now. I plan to say this later. If you give your child unfiltered, unmonitored internet access, you are a fool. It's just foolish if you do that and just think my child will be fine. But we're going to talk on that again later. So, this is your opinion again. Oh, I will, because it's coming again later. That was an introduction. So, goldfish effect. Kids accustomed to short videos consumption, 15-second dopamine hits, struggle with deep work tasks like reading or long-form problem solving. Makes sense. Everything now is 15 seconds. And swipe, swipe, swipe. If I don't like it, I swipe. If I don't, it's just, it's goldfish effect, they call it. And it's, I think it's harming our children quite a bit. Okay, so that is actually the end of the stats. Good. So, that's pretty much our whole time on statistics. So what I'll do is just briefly introduce where we're going to go from here. So all of that is just to say is what should we do? I would really wish we could just say refrain. I wish we could say don't give our kids a cell phone. Don't have them use the internet or social media or technology. And honestly, it probably wouldn't be the end of the world. Wouldn't be the worst thing for them, but I think it's probably not helpful. They are going to turn 18, 19, 20 years old, and they are going to have access to this, and they are not going to know what to do with that freedom if we don't teach them what's going on, teach them the dangers, teach them the proper usages, things like that. We can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. We're here. Your child is going to go to school. Every child around them is going to be using this stuff and influencing your children on this stuff, so we can't just say no, but we do need to have some guidelines as we move forward and help our children, because unfortunately maybe it's necessary, but to some extent then we have to really be careful and help our children use it, help ourselves use it, hopefully maybe even our adults, we can rethink what we're doing here. To be honest, I envy the old timers. I talk to people all day every day for my work. I'd say a few times a month, maybe a handful of times a month, and my wife takes information and people that don't have email. Love it. They're great customers for me. People who don't have email, people who don't have smartphones, they're good customers for some reason. They just want to show up and do a good job. They're just going to say, do the work. As opposed to everybody else who's who knows what. But that's not my point. I kind of envy those people, though, who don't have email. They don't have a smartphone. It doesn't matter. But to be honest, I kind of envy them. That's my uncle. No smartphone, no internet in his house. And I really, in some ways, envy those people because they are not missing it. They don't care. And they're fine. They are absolutely fine. And most of those people are doing very well.
And there is a lie out there that if we don't give this to our kids, we technological, what is it? Something. Mm-hmm. And even as Pepper read the book too, that is an actual 100% a lie. It's something very natural to them. You do not have to introduce it at a young age. They will figure it out. They're not going to be behind. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest thing that I was told, because I am very adamant about this stuff. And they'll be behind. They will not. They'll figure it out. I promise you. It's a lie that is out there that we keep telling ourselves, is this is why I'm giving it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the young age, or we're hiding behind the fact that, they have to know how to do this, Or, this might be the next slide, or we do this.
Mm-hmm.
We just stick our head in the sand and either say, I don't have social media, so I'm not going to pay any attention to my children's social media, or I'm going to pretend nothing's a problem and just say everything is going to be fine. So that's where we're going to go next week. I'll just wrap it up from there. So hopefully we can start talking about what we do with it from here. All right, let's pray. Dear Lord, thank you again for the opportunity to be here. Thank you for the people that are here, Lord. your people in this church. Thank you for the church that we're free to be here, Lord. We do not face persecution right now. Thank you so much that we can be here without fear. Just pray for your guidance and wisdom, Lord, in our lives as we approach technology and the internet and social media and things that I think the enemy uses, Lord, to break down families. And I think he's using them, and I think you know already what was going on and that this is part of your plan. But I just pray that your people can do well and be steadfast and just be faithful in it, Lord, and that we can raise good families and godly children. In Jesus' name, amen.